Great news for our new generation of parents. So far about the impact of early, less than conscious parenting on your author's later life. And, dear reader, I lay value on communicating here that I've truly and completely forgiven my parents. There is simply nothing to be sorry for anyway. Similarly, as to the quality of parenting that our daughters received from their dad and mum, I sincerely believe there's no reason to feel sorry for my or our oblivion, for the mistakes we made as a father or mother. Feelings of guilt? Baloney for sure. For the simple reason that we were only able to perform our role as parents with a degree of consciousness of where we were then and there. Oh yes, I sincerely wish I would have had access to all the wisdom concerning the issues touched upon in this book at that time. But oh, what a happy coincidence that the new generation of parents-to-be, my two wonderful daughters included, do have access to all this knowing, that they can learn from all the fallacies and unconscious faux pas that their parents once, unwittingly, had poured out over them. Another glorious circumstance, especially in our rich Western world, is that we've been living in peace, read absence of war, for as many as 75 years now. According to historians, this is a situation that has never before occurred in our history. I take the liberty to pose here that the wealth our Western world disposes of absolutely suffices for each family or individual citizen to be able to have a roof over their heads and to be without hunger or shortage of food. In other words, our life no longer needs to be about survival, like, for example, in the Middle Ages or in times of war. So I feel we can safely conclude here that the only condition on my path for balance, as we have extensively dealt with before, is that I take the initiative to create an environment around myself that is free of stress. Our new generation of parents lives in an environment that provides the potential as well as the information and the tools to conceive and raise their children in a truly conscious fashion. How brilliant is that? And once more, this has never happened before. We live in a unique era. The 37 manual muscle tests on I Am Good. Here comes the grand finale. Remember, in the footnote to the preschool brain balance program, I promised to fill you in about the mind-blowing outcome of a test we did at Escuela Urbana Mixta San Pablo. I'm referring to the 37 manual muscle tests on I Am Good. First, some background information. All tests were performed by Ms. Engli Josefina Kiakainsekek, together with her assistant Rosa. The next paragraph is literally copied and pasted from the research. Quote, the age of the 37 participants tested ranges between 7 and 16 years. Participating were 9 students of grade 1, 2 students of grade 2, 6 students of grade 4, 8 students of grade 5, and 12 students of grade 6. It should be noted that the 11 students from grades 1 and 2 had not started reading and writing yet, and there are 26 students from grades 4, 5, and 6 who had. Ms. Engli had interviewed the grade teachers of grades 3 up to 6 in advance about which students showed characteristics of dyslexia. All 37 students were academically slower than the average students of their age group. All of the students of grades 3 to 6 showed certain characteristics pointing in the direction of a severe degree of dyslexia. According to their teachers, their proficiency in reading and writing was extremely low, in some cases virtually non-existent. It will stand to reason that in the rural area of Lake Atitlan, no child had ever obtained an official declaration for being dyslexic. All students knew in advance and had agreed that they were going to be tested. When it was a student's turn, Miss Engley walked to the class to meet the student and accompanied them to the room where the session would take place. The 37 manual muscle tests were performed between March 9th and April the 8th, 2017. There were three sessions in a week on Mondays, Tuesdays and Thursdays, with a maximum of three children per session. And, ladies and gentlemen, here are the results of the 37 manual muscle tests on I Am Good. All 37 students tested strong. Do you all remember that the arm of Mr. Joseph H. Ewalds, who was not even dyslexic, went down like a lead balloon 5 years ago? After I had allowed the stunning total result to sink in, I could only come up with one conclusion. The fact that all 37 students test strong on I Am Good suggests that every single student tested feels intrinsically happy with who they are. In spite of being academically less proficient, each of them seems to have a positive self-image and high self-esteem. Apparently, being less skilled academically does not necessarily need to be a decisive factor in whether children really believe in themselves or intrinsically feel that they are good, that they are lovable. This conclusion can be said to stand in stark contrast to children in Western countries who have been diagnosed with dyslexia. They generally show social and emotional problems like a lack of confidence, an aversion to learning, behavioral problems, and poor self-esteem. Reference, Ryan, 2018. My thesis ends with the following conclusive observation. The results of the 37 manual muscle tests on I Am Good at Escuela Urbana Mixta San Pablo lead to the conclusion that a child who has an adequately operational, misbalanced brain can be functioning perfectly well and be leading a happy and balanced life. The results can also be said to underline that absence of stress is synonymous with two hemispheres working happily together in coordination and harmony. Could it be the environment? I invite you to judge for yourself. For that purpose, I will present you with the integral diary entry that I wrote early February 2017. That day, I paid my first visit to Escuela Urbana Mixta in San Pablo and consequently made an afternoon stroll through the streets of the Maya village. Quote of diary entry entitled Environment and Atmosphere. An interesting feature of the sample population of the school is that the social and cultural background of the students at Escuela Urbana Mixta San Pablo differs substantially from that of most Western countries. The indigenous villagers are closely related to and tied with both the blessings and vagaries of nature. The beauty of the Lake Atitlan area is unrivaled, with stunning lake views and three volcanoes surrounding the lake. San Pablo La Laguna is situated just above the northwest shore of the lake and at an altitude of 1,600 meters. The terrain is very hilly and the region is known as the Western Highlands. This means that people are used to walking up and down steep hills and naturally are in good physical shape. The air they breathe is 100% unpolluted. The volcanic soil is rich in minerals. Avocados, oranges, bananas, and all kinds of vegetables are produced locally and are consequently rich with minerals and vitamins. At the same time, locals are familiar with the vagaries of nature. During the first decade of this century, two hurricanes hit Guatemala and the lake area, accompanied by significant destruction, mudslides, and washed away structures. Furthermore, The danger of earthquakes is always lurking in the background, but people have learned to live with these aspects. The overall atmosphere at the school and in the village is friendly, warm-hearted and laid back. People are generally good-natured, happy and friendly, evidenced by the frequent smiles and greetings one receives when walking through San Pablo's streets. They are far away from the distractions our Western world tends to offer and relatively unaffected by time pressure or stress as a result of a full agenda. Mayan communities in the small villages of the Lake Atitlan area are close-knit with a high degree of family involvement and social well-being. Fathers and mothers sit on the doorstep knitting or embroidering clothes in the colors of their specific Mayan tribe. Mothers sell homemade food to children at the school ground. Mobile phones are gadgets that almost no students at school are really familiar with. End of diary quote. Some more environmental factors mirrored with our Western societies. The following paragraph as well is a literal quote from my dissertation. The outcome that all 37 students at Escuela Urbana Mixta San Pablo tested strong on I'm good can only point in the direction that they feel loved by their parents for who they are. The fact that a child is good at working in the field or helping out their parents at home seems to prevail over bringing home good grades from school. Unlike the situation in our Western world, in the Lake Atitlan area, students do not have to live up to high academic expectations of parents, teachers, or the school system. Another factor might be that the same parents generally maintain a close physical relationship with their children. For the first few years of their lives, Mayan babies are carried on their mothers' backs all day long, and families often practice co-sleeping. Furthermore, traditional Mayan society has a close-knit family structure, with parents generally having more children than in our modern industrialized society, more family members living under one roof, and greater care of and contact with elder generations. These two are not common features of modern Western society. They simply do not fit in with our Western values and practices, where productivity, efficiency and independence stand central, and newborns are often separated from their parents for extended periods. Parents are told to let infants cry for fear of spoiling them. In order to motivate children to achieve better, some parents tend to prod them by telling them they are not good enough and should do better. These modern practices do not seem to contribute to what Bruce Lipton, in his award-winning chapter on conscious parenting, refers to as individual empowerment of the child. Reference, Lipton 2011, Chapter 7. So, the brilliant conclusion is that, yes, it is possible to be happy and balanced on the condition that there is absence of any trace of stress. Dear people, many times have I shared the sublime outcome of the San Pablo project with willing ears over the past few years. I felt the drawback was always that it is hardly possible to convey the real value of the story with someone in a nutshell. In many cases, I felt the listener just didn't have the time to take the imaginative leap toward the real gist and the full essence of the thrilling implication that overshines the outcome of the 37 muscle tests. Until the moment I'm phrasing this sentence, there hardly seems to have been any tangible progress as to spreading the word. But, I'm so thrilled that this is changing now. The effect of the aha moment on April 7th, 2017 that I experienced right after the research has never abated. For sure, now's the time, now's the moment. So, what could be the message anyway? When travelling, I seemed to be meeting more and more young Western adults who had picked up a job after their university degree, worked for 2 or 3 years for a boss, and then concluded that they were not happy, that this was not it. Next thing, they quit their job, said goodbye to their career, bought a backpack and a flight ticket to India, Southeast Asia or South America. On their quest, they subsequently spent weeks meditating in an ashram or a monastery in India or Nepal. Others had done ayahuasca in Peru or spent 7 days and nights in a dark room in a center in Costa Rica. Eventually, they end up at a spot they consider paradise on earth, buy a cheap, dilapidated place there and start a center, a restaurant or a hostel. Here is maybe a slightly controversial version of such a story. It's based on some conversations I had with a guy called Benno, the Dutch owner of a backpacker hostel in a small rural village in the Colombian Andes. It was in the spring of 2014. Benno told me he had hit on the beautiful spot exactly 3 years before. After backpacking around the world for several years, he had bought the ramshackle building. He renovated and refurbished it together with local craftsmen within a year or so. This was a very happy stage in his life, he informed me. Since he had opened Hostel Cheerio 2 years ago, business had been thriving with excellent occupancy rates. But in a rather moaning tone, he shared with me that since the moment of completion, he had somehow gradually lost his fervor. And he had become critical of the locals' work ethos. You can't trust them. They don't stick to agreements. They are always late for work. I hate their macho lifestyle. Authorities here are corrupted. Moreover, he added, I feel lonely here. I want to have a woman who loves me. In short, the owner was so not happy. He went on, To tell you the truth, Joseph, my dearest wish is to sell the place. But you know, the price would be too high, even for a Westerner. Selling it to a local wouldn't be an option anyway. Besides not having the money, they don't have a clue how to run a hostel. You know what a local Colombian would do when he opens a hostel? Well, he would nail a plate over the front door of his house with the newly coined name of the hostel on it. The next thing he does is go sit on the doorstep and wait for the first customer. It was getting late. Moreover, I felt I'd lent my ears long enough to the owner's plaintive outpourings. I reached for the door handle and announced that I was tired and really felt like turning in. Just before I closed the door of my hostel room on the first floor landing, he managed to squeeze in, You know what, Joseph? You would really render me a big service when you would set fire to the whole place tonight. End of conversation. During the night, I pondered over the man's rather sorry predicament. After a while, I arrived at an interesting, light-hearted observation that I shared with my fellow countrymen first thing in the morning. Benno, I've been considering the story you shared with me last night. I ended up with a maybe rather diverting reflection. One could wonder, who is the happier man? The local who decides to go sit and wait on the doorstep for his first customer? Or the Westerner who is constantly concerned about the occupancy rates of his hotel? I have every reason to trust that meanwhile my friend has seen the light at the end of the tunnel. The next morning, when I opened my door and looked down from the landing, I saw him sitting behind the screen of his computer, loudly singing out merry songs. For myself, the message of meeting Benno was that in the end it certainly looks like we, personified by the two new hostel owners in the story, could maybe learn some lessons from each other. One more time, I feel this could be nicely and effectively illustrated by looking at the characteristics of both left and right brain functions. Yes, and great fun for me now to leave back again to that overview. We know that in the West, in our normal wakeful condition, we tend to operate predominantly from our left hemisphere. Easy to gauge what left brain characteristics seem to block state of balance and happiness in the story above. It looks like pretty much all of the characteristics summed up in the chart could apply here. Lo and behold, thinking, logic and rationality, language and talking, counting, calculating numbers, linear and logical thinking, judgment, awareness of time, alertness, worry, effort, trying, competition. The obvious answers in our Western quest for fulfillment and happiness definitely seem to lie in opening up for some characteristics to be found on the other side, opening up for creativity, imagination, peacefulness, just being, relaxing and doing my best. And how about adding trust that the customers will come when I unconditionally believe that my wish will be fulfilled? Stress gone. What could be the message for San Pablo? As to the San Pableños, with the pending growing exposure to Western influences, it might certainly be worth contemplating to develop some more assets of the left brain. This book is full of fun. Another amusing anecdote coming up. As much as 2 decades ago, Mr. Daniel Ortiz's muscle testings in the Lake Area had already diagnosed a left brain deficiency in a great number of children. He disclosed to me that most children really needed some assistance in developing their proficiency in sequencing. Therefore, sequencing had generally been the main focus of the training program on the Atitlan schools. Dennis provided a typical example of an exercise that was being used to train this left brain function. The assignment would be phrased as follows. Hi, Antonio. Look, here's a book. Please put it on the teacher's desk over there. When you've done that, take the pen that you see lies on the desk and put that on the bookshelf in the corner of the room. Finally, pick up the alarm clock that's on the bookshelf and bring that to me. According to our therapist, in many cases, the performance of this exercise would go like this. The child would walk to the teacher's desk and nicely left the book there. Next thing, he or she stood looking about, blank-faced, helpless and forlorn, at not having a clue what to do next. The following, slightly joking, maybe rather relativizing observation sprang up. You know, Dennis, one could also look upon the situation as a great blessing for these kids. This way, they will never be stressed. They are occupied with just one thing at a time, and this way, their mind is exclusively focused on what is. They are always in the now, never concerned about what's next. I do realize, dear reader, the situation is only fun as long as the San Pablo kid is not working in a restaurant, especially when that's owned by a gringo. One can foresee that with more and more exposure to Western products, norms and standards, San Pableños might not be able to get away with such poor sequencing skills for very long. For that purpose, the friendly message for the 37 San Pablo children could be to develop some of the left brain functions in order to be way better prepared for future times. For as we all know, multitasking is considered an outstanding characteristic for any employee in a Western business. Maybe at this point, a logical next step would be to come up with an overview of those things us Westerners could learn from the San Pablo experience. In this respect, however, I would gladly leave any observation or conclusion to the reader's own discernment. In line with the previous conclusion concerning expected future developments for the Lake Atitlan area, let's look at one or two maybe less desirable Western influences that seem to be affecting the life and well-being of the indigenous people. Remember that I championed the healthy food habits of the inhabitants of San Pablo La Laguna before in my 2017 diary entry? In it, I emphasize that people in this particular village had not been exposed to the distractions our Western world tends to offer, and that this also held for the healthy food they take in. Unfortunately, I've learned that these are conditions that seem to be drastically changing over the years, especially in those villages of the lake area that increasingly thrive on tourism, like San Marcos La Laguna. Yes, the village bulges with healthy fruits and vegetables that people have access to year-round. But guess what? A research done some 8 years ago showed that most of the school children were malnourished. The report read, quote, "Children don't get the nutrients to be healthy. Instead of eating delicious fruits, vegetables or herbs, they tend to eat junk food and take soft drinks. All of this causes disease and leaves a lot of garbage behind to boot." Unquote. This unwelcome situation had resulted in a local initiative. A foundation was started called Pura Vida. Meanwhile, they have organized campaigns at all schools around the lake with great results. I gladly invite you, dear reader, to have a peek at their website, puravidaatitlan.org, which happens to be run by my Guatemalan-born friend Lenny and is supported by a group of enthusiastic volunteers. Yes, we can definitely learn from each other. Here's another one in a related category. Not too long ago, I stumbled on a rather concealed campaign to lure Guatemalan children and families toward Western food intake habits. It was in the form of an invitation for all Guatemalans to enter the doors of a Western food chain that tends to sell not just healthy foods, drinks and tidbits. Ironically, the campaign took place on El Día del Niño, Children's Day. Last year, El Día was celebrated on September 25th, and your correspondent happened to be in Antigua de Guatemala, staying at his favorite guest house run by the extremely hospitable landlady, Eva. With a grateful heart, she explained the details of the McDonald's campaign. Quote, "Every year on Children's Day, the McDonald's branches all over Guatemala hold a campaign that entitles every single child in Guatemala to buy a Happy Meal for just $1. Unquote. While sharing this with me, her countenance betrayed that she actually interpreted this action as an ultimate deed of charity. She emphasized that otherwise most Guatemalan families would never be able to afford to cross the threshold of the number one food paradise for kids. Dear friends, guilty pleasures don't exist. Easy for me to publicly admit here that I am, be it an occasional, frequenter of Mac. As a matter of fact, it was only a few days ago that I had discovered their new branch in Antigua. Large and fancy, and secretly hidden behind a colonial facade. I took up the plan to check out the place once more on the occasion of this national holiday. On arrival, however, I was right away dissuaded from even making an attempt to enter. There was a line of at least 50 meters, with eager, happy faces of all ages, in many cases complete families. The queue already started on the sidewalk. Yes, I communicated the experience with Eva later that day, but I had decided ahead not to share any deeper considerations about the issue with her. Everybody happy? She might find out about it rather sooner than later, because I happened to share with her that I'm writing a book, and in reply she said she could hardly wait to read it. Above examples might suggest that an increasing number of indigenous people are gradually straying from their authentic paths. But what in a wider perspective could be looked upon as a welcome side effect is what one can see manifesting almost all over the planet these days. cultures and people from all corners and races seem to be mixing, meeting and integrating. And wow, also during my travels, I've witnessed many, many cases where curiosity and caring for each other are the incentive. In my experience, it's like in this day and age, the conditions are being created for an increasing understanding for each other, for mutual love. And this concept is actually pretty much how my fascination for the ancient Maya culture was once kindled in me. It's 8 years ago now that I first crossed the Holy Maya Lake in the Lancha to San Pedro. I took a 2-week Spanish course there. Having once experienced the special magical Atitlan energy and the mesmerizing Maya culture, I right away knew this place was going to play a prominent role in the rest of my life. Back home, after my first Maya pilgrimage, I appeased my curiosity by reading as many books about Mayan folklore as I could lay hands on. I was totally sold the moment I hit on the following ultimate heart-to-heart phrase. It goes, In La Kesh. It's the greeting an indígena would share with a stranger when they first meet. It means as much as, I am another you, and you are another me. The moment we look into each other's eyes, you see me, I see you. Simply put, we are one. The most wonderful phrase one can think of that celebrates our collective beingness in a sacred way. Oh, I'm so grateful to have ended up at Lago de Atitlan. The place has really stolen my heart. Footnote. In the previous paragraph, the names Benno, Hostel Cheerio and Eva are not their real names, for reasons of privacy. So, what can we learn? Dear friends, as observed a few times before, this book is not written to convince or convert, but rather to reconnect. So, please let what you read be the truth within your own hearts, where the only authenticity resides. Oops, here comes one more linguistic gem. When looking for the etymological origin of the word religion, I hit on a source that says religion is derived from the Latin verb religare, meaning to bind together again, to connect again. How amazing is that? Doesn't this look very much like the shared starting point as well as the underlying message of any religion all along? So here we are. This concept would perfectly apply to the overall thread of this book, that first and foremost, the path to happiness starts with reconnecting the two brain halves, with bringing my brain in balance. When the brain is in balance, my whole being is in balance. We have seen that only then I'm able to love myself and feel loved, when my two hemispheres are working happily together in synchronicity. San Pablo shows the way. With all 37 children testing strong on I'm good. Thanks to the benign environment they live in and to their parents and teachers who don't put pressure on them. They all felt happy, balanced and loved at that particular moment. That was in the spring of 2017. In the course of time, however, the odds are that through more cultural integration, the environment for the San Pablo kids will soon be subject to changes. Therefore, to remain in that state of happiness and balance, it might be wise for them to develop some more of their left brain assets. The situation for the West appears to be exactly reversed. One could say that in order to be or become happy and balanced creatures, most of us could opt for opening up for more right hemisphere assets. For both situations, it could be concluded that finally it's all about the two brain halves remaining in balance, or about retraining the hemisphere that is still lagging behind until there is brain balance. We've also seen that especially for 5- and 6-year-olds, brain balance needs to be the starting point before the child is fit to expose herself to any academic occupation. We touched upon the predicament that these days in our Western world, mainly as a result of parental and educational pressure and expectations, somewhere between 10 and 20% of young children simply aren't fit to function in our current Western educational systems any longer, and that these percentages are going up every year. Every sensible person can see that the hypersensitive, highly intelligent new child is not fit to sit arms crossed in a class with 30 same-age students, or to be taught according to an age-appropriate curriculum and showered with tests and exams in a system in which school subjects requiring left brain assets are generally most highly thought of. We have seen how crucial it is to let the child play until the moment her curiosity for knowing and learning facts from books has been naturally roused. She knows when that moment arrives, and she is the only one who knows. The chart of the child's integrated perspectives aptly shows the interactive conditions the child requires in order to be and remain in balance. So, as extensively dealt with in part one, here's the answer once more in a slightly more outspoken tone. To deprive kindergarteners of the opportunity to start out with a balanced brain would mean a broad daylight shortchange to innocent 5- and 6-year-olds. The 6 reasons to implement the preschool brain balance program without notice, summed up in the conclusion of part one, will suffice for any school administrator or minister to take action as of now. And dear parents, why wait until the school system has changed by top-down regulations? Experience teaches that it can take years for politicians or ministers before they will see the light. Your new child is in need right now. It's May Day. Time to take responsibility now. How? Simply by taking action. Realize that a percentage between 10 and 20 of kids that don't fit in means we are looking at millions of kindergarteners worldwide. To all those parents, simply unite. You and your child deserve better than a school system that makes both of you unhappy. No doubt, every single parent who is reading this has the loving power and the talents to take the initiative to consider the prevailing possibilities to set up a school environment your beloved child will thrive in. One more hint? How about approaching all those teachers who, after 1 or 2 years of working in the field, disappointedly quit their jobs? There are legions of them. They had at one time enthusiastically picked up the studies to become a teacher. But pretty soon, after ending up in their dream job, they got deeply frustrated and disheartened. Disappointed, they could not give their students the love and attention they were entitled to. You bet they can't wait to start in a school environment that does provide them the scope to teach from their hearts. It certainly looks like it's up to you, dear parents, to create a stress-free school environment that's optimally beneficial for you and your child. Now, yes, you can. Oh, and for those parents who foresee that setting up an adequate school environment for their hypersensitive child would be untimely because she has reached or is soon reaching the age of 5, here's some more great news. In a large number of countries, there is the possibility to take a detour through homeschooling your loved one. In the US, in nearly all states, homeschooling is legal. And currently, there are said to be more than 2 million kids who are home educated, and the number is rapidly increasing. As to Europe, homeschooling is legal in as many as 21 countries, with another 6 countries where it is possible, but under certain restrictions. Reference: Home Education in Europe 2019. Under the title The Legality of Home Education, the same source provides the following rather inspiring and encouraging information about the subject. Quote, home education is a valid alternative to school, and experience shows that home-educated children often approach life with a more open-minded outlook. They may not have detailed knowledge of some subjects, as covered by a country's national curriculum. However, they often have an enthusiasm for learning and discovery that lasts throughout their life, and in-depth knowledge in specific subjects that they vastly enjoy. Home education is often largely informal, particularly with younger children, with lessons being taught through games and conversation. Unquote. Reference: Home Education in Europe 2019. A US-based research provides the following laudable details. Quote, homeschooling avoids potentially harmful influences like bullying, peer pressure, competition, and poor self-esteem. Moreover, children don't have to worry about the issue of fitting in that plagues just about every child in the public school system. In comparison to high school students, homeschoolers are, generally, more emotionally stable, exhibit less destructive behavior, are quite socially adept, and are quite successful in interpersonal and occupational relationships. Unquote. As to the efficiency of home education, the report mentions, quote, sometimes kids can accomplish in just a few hours what would take a whole day in a public school setting. Unquote. Reference: Loveless B. 2020. At this point, dear reader, I'm somehow reminded again of the dinner discussion at the New York restaurant between the future parents and grandparents. The following contemplation came to me. Next time I witness a conversation like this, the father-to-be's reply to the question what kind of plans they have once the baby is born could very well be, well, dear parents, both of us have the heartfelt intention to raise and educate our child in as much pure consciousness as we can both offer, and with the same degree of unconditional love we felt the moment we shared our wish to have a child. Doesn't that sound like celestial music? The implication of unconditional love is that there are zero conditions, merely possibilities. How conscious does that sound? Another flashback. Here come to mind the previously cited heartrending stories of the uncle and aunt who emigrated to Canada some 70 years ago, and that of the young Guatemalan lovers who are living in Australia now. Both examples are clearly testimonies of how far unconditional love can reach. Their feeling of love and responsibility for raising their children or future children in an optimally conscious environment literally knows no boundaries. The same could count for any homeschooling possibilities. So, dear parents, in case you live in a country or state where homeschooling is still illegal, why not consider moving to a country where it is legal and also happily start from scratch? One more demonstration that there is simply no end to possibilities. The only condition is just to open one's heart to all of them. Here's the greatest news thinkable for humanity and for Mother Earth, based on the premise that whole brain function is the gateway to a higher consciousness. Exactly for this reason, dear parents, a new child with full access to the assets of both brains will be able to work wonders, create miracles. She will come up with answers to lots of questions and issues that intellectuals and scientists, for the simple reason that they limit themselves to mainly left brain functions, couldn't even have dreamed of. So please realize these kids are all born with the capacity to think out of the 3D box. Let's welcome these gems with open arms. The world is waiting for the creative brain power of your hypersensitive child. So, mums and dads, time to take the responsibility and the initiative to create an environment in which your bright, illuminated girl or boy wonder can thrive and prosper. This way, they will be in the position to evolve into that child prodigy instead of becoming a problem child and a burden to society. And what's more, humanity and Mother Earth can no longer wait. No need to wait for authorities, politics, or a minister of education. Your initiative and motivation is 1,000 times more direct from the heart and effective anyway. Let the voice of the heart be the guiding principle. Finally, it's all about involvement right from my heart, about unconditional love. And here we come full circle. For each human soul involved, happiness is a matter of balance and love. In Lakesh. Life is a rich vessel to draw from. It mirrors all kinds of events that befall you, your dear ones, and all your relationships.